So this is our condition, this condition of alienation from ourselves, from our bodies, our feelings, emotions, thoughts. This is the state into which we've got ourselves, into which the world has got us, the age has got us, society has got us, our parents have got us, teachers have got us, and finally, we ourselves have continued the good work. So what happens next? What happens after this? Well, in the case of some people, in the case of some of us at least, we come into contact with Buddhism. We come into contact with Buddhism. And then what happens? When we come into contact with Buddhism, amongst all the wonderful things we start learning and hearing about, we start learning all about mindfulness and awareness. And what we hear, or what we're taught about mindfulness or awareness, seems to say that what we have to do is to stand, as it were, aloof from ourselves, especially aloof from our negative emotions, and not experience anything, just watch ourselves, just as we were watching, or just as though we were watching, another person. This is what the teaching of mindfulness seems to say. So, of course, we are very much impressed by this, because in our alienated state, in our alienated condition, we can't help feeling, we can't help thinking that this seems just the thing for us. So we start practicing. We start practicing awareness or practicing mindfulness or what we think is awareness, what we think is mindfulness. We stand back from our thoughts, back from our emotions, back from our feelings, just look at them, sort of push them out there. And what is the result? In 9 cases out of 10, in this way, we simply succeed in intensifying our experience of alienated awareness. Now, not only that, we learn other good things from Buddhism. We learn, for instance, that craving, desire, anger, and so on, are all unskillful states. We're told we mustn't call them sins, because in Buddhism there aren't any sins, they're unskillful states. But they're just as bad as sins. If anything, they're much worse. And we've got to get rid of them. So we're very glad to hear this. We're very glad to hear. We think we're glad to hear, because we can't even really feel glad at this stage. We think we're very glad to hear that craving and desire and anger and fear are unskillful states, because this means we're able to go on sweeping them all under the carpet and pretending that they aren't really there. And this too increases our alienated awareness. And later on still, when we start reading books about Buddhism and studying Buddhist philosophy, we come up against, or we come across, the anatta doctrine, that is to say, the doctrine of no self, or the non-self. And at this stage, if we're lucky, some smiling oriental monk tells us that according to Buddhism, there is no self. The self is pure illusion. If we could only see clearly and see properly, we should see the self is just not there. We haven't got a self. That's our big mistake. And this too appeals to us very, very much. We rather like the sound of this teaching. Why is this? Because as the result of practicing mindfulness, so-called mindfulness, and increasing our alienated awareness, we've begun to feel rather unreal. And to us it seems, in our sort of experience of unreality of ourselves, it seems as though we've begun to realize the truth of anatta. We've begun to have some experience of that great spiritual truth that there is no self. In other words, we start thinking that we've developed insight in the transcendental sense. And maybe the same smiling oriental monk, not knowing anything about Western psychology or the mistakes that Western people can make, encourages us to go on thinking this. And the result is we just get more and more alienated. And we start feeling pains in the head. It seems sometimes as though our skull is being constricted, although some people have described it to me, there's a great iron band around the head, and it's getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And one is getting, and this is because one is getting, just more and more alienated. And in some very severe, very extreme cases, people even have a complete mental breakdown. And in this way, a very serious situation develops indeed. I may say that this is the sort of situation that I encountered when I came back to this country originally in 1964 from India. During the 20 years that I was in India, I had, of course, kept up some kind of communication with some Buddhists in this country, and I knew roughly what was going on, and I knew that there were one or two meditation centers and people practicing meditation, and I'd be pleased to learn this. But when I came back to England and started seeing things for myself, I found, in fact, that the situation was very different, and I got quite a shock. I remember one occasion I was taken to a certain meditation center, I'm not going to mention any names, and I was shown some people who were meditating, who had been meditating for several weeks. And as I've said, I had quite a shock, because they seemed to me just like zombies. They just weren't there at all. They were so completely alienated from themselves. And I found quite a number of people in this state in London, after having practiced mindfulness, awareness, and so on, in this sort of alienated way. They just made themselves mentally ill. And some of them had landed up in mental hospitals. They'd just been not meditating, but developing alienated awareness. Now, we mustn't think that this sort of thing happens only to those who take up Buddhism. It can happen to those who take up, in the wrong way, other forms of Eastern tradition too. Suppose your alienated person comes in contact not with Buddhism. Suppose he or suppose she comes in contact with Vedanta. Vedanta tells you are not the body. It tells you are not the emotions. You are not the mind. You are not any of these things. What are you? You are God. You are God with a capital G. You are Brahman. You are reality itself. You've just got to wake up to this fact. Don't think that you're the body. Don't think that you're the emotions. Don't think that you're the mind. Think that you are God. And God, of course, doesn't have a body, and so on. So you practice in this way too. You say, I'm not the body. You're already alienated from it anyway, but you say, I'm not the body. I'm not the emotions. I don't have any emotions. I'm not the mind. I'm God. So what is the result? You just end up in the same way as with this wrong practice of mindfulness or awareness. You end up alienated from yourself. Now, this is not to say that the Vedantic teaching is wrong. It's not to say that the Buddhist teaching is wrong. The trouble is that we apply it wrongly. Or sometimes we may say the Eastern teachers, even in the West, unacquainted with psychology, unacquainted with the Western mind, even they apply it wrongly. The teaching is metaphysically true. In a metaphysical sense, yes, there is no individual self. In a metaphysical sense, yes, you are God. But we don't take all this metaphysically, we take it psychologically. And in this way, all the harm is done. In this way, the misunderstanding begins. So a strange sort of situation develops, a strange sort of pseudo-spirituality, and a strange sort of atmosphere in certain places. Go to some Buddhist circles, you find the people, on the whole, quite mindful, quite aware. You know, they shut the door quietly and they wipe their feet before they come into the house if it's a rainy day, and so on, and they don't get angry, or at least they don't show it. Very controlled and very quiet. But everything seems a bit dead. They don't seem really alive. And what has happened? Why is this? Well, the reason is they've not developed integrated awareness. They've not, as it were, merged their awareness and their life principle. their aliveness. They've suppressed, they've repressed their life principle, and they develop this cold, alienated awareness instead of the real, the true, integrated awareness.